Om Shanti. We looked at the two videos, and is everybody here who was here this morning? Or was there anybody who's here now who wasn't here this morning? Okay, well, the best thing, I think this will probably be on the jewels, and you'll have to catch it up there because it's a bit complex for me to bring you up to date on it. But the two videos are on YouTube unlisted, and if you want to see them again, you have to contact me and I'll send you the link. That's about the best way. And my email is denise.lawrence@uk.brahmakumaris.org, or on your little card, which is the Raj Yoga TV one. The Gita is really what we do as Brahma Kumars Kumaris. Srimad Bhagavad Gita is the divine song of God. The Murli is the Gita. And one of the things that's very interesting, when you read the Gita, and the translation that we were using is from a man called Winthrop Sargent. It's a United States New York University publication, I think. And you can find it on Amazon. It's quite cheap if you get it on your Kindle. And why I use this translation is because it has no comments. I don't like other people's comments, right? So you have the Sanskrit verse, and then it's transliterated in English letters so that you can actually sort of read it to yourself. And then on the other side of the page, you have the dictionary meaning of each word so that you can kind of participate in the translation. And then it has a rough translation and then a more poetic translation. And that's it. It doesn't have anything else. Sometimes a few notes to explain some references or some names or something like this. But it's just very rare to find a translation of the Gita which doesn't tell you what to think. But this one doesn't. So that's good. And when you read the Murli, Sakar Murli especially, you will actually notice that there are quite a lot of sentences and phrases in the Sakar Murli that are also in the Gita. And of course, the mantras are part of the Gita. So I don't know if Om Shanti is in there, but Man Mana Bhav, Madhyaji Bhav, Ma Mekam Sharanam Vraj, all these various mantras which come in our teachings, they're there. And another thing that's very interesting is to look at the names for God. You know, for us we have Shiv Baba, and then we have Bap Dada, which is Brahma Baba and Shiv Baba combined. But in the Gita, you will see many, many different names for God. And as I said earlier in the morning, you know, normally when you look at the Gita, or you think about the Gita, it gets associated with a picture of Krishna and Arjuna dressed up as copper-aged warriors brandishing their arrows and bows and arrows and swords and looking a bit like the Roman army, and they're going to war. And so it looks like sort of, what is it, Ben-Hur or something, you know. Did you see that film? Yeah. So, but when you remove all of that iconography and you just see what it says, and you look at the names in terms of not which characters they portray, but what the names actually mean. So, for example, the word Krishna actually means the most attractive one. And you know that Shiv Baba is described as Satyam Shivam Sundaram. And you have that little book from Frederick with various points in it that you must have read, which is also called Satyam Shivam Sundaram, which means the truth, the benefactor, and the beautiful one. Sundar is beautiful. And you know the epithet for Krishna is Shyam Sundar, which is usually translated as the beautiful and the ugly. But in fact, Shyam doesn't mean ugly. It means dark-skinned. And dark-skinned people may or may not be ugly. And white-skinned people may or may not be beautiful. But you can see where the foundation of racism came, you see. And so in the culture, the more your skin is light, the more beautiful you are. Even if you have a really twisted up nose and you're still beautiful, you know. So, and if your skin is very dark, even if your features are very beautiful, you're still called ugly. But that's a view, you know. It's in the eye. So they say beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And of course, when Baba comes along and talks to us, he says, you know what, this has nothing to do with your skin color. It's all to do with the brightness of the soul. So when the soul is absolutely pure, of course it's very bright. And when the soul is very impure, it's a bit dim in comparison with when it's pure. So that is the description that shows that the soul of Krishna passes through the cycle. And as it passes through Golden Age, Silver Age, Copper Age, Iron Age, the light reduces and the soul becomes, relatively speaking, dark. And so all of these epithets are interpreted conventionally as to do with the skin color. But of course, it's nothing to do with the skin color. And so when we're body conscious, then we're also racist or color conscious. But when you're soul conscious, you become conscious of a person's vibration. Because we do have to have the power of discrimination. And the power of discrimination actually allows us to detect if somebody's, you know, really clean, really pure, or they're mixed, or they're look nice on the outside but not so good on the inside, you know. So so these are some of the things that you will find in terms of these descriptions of God. And for example, there's two descriptions of his hair. Of course, God doesn't have any hair, but anyway. One is Keshavam. Keshavam means somebody who has a really nice, silky, nice, flowing black hair. That's good for Krishna, the man. And then there's another one, I've forgotten it for the moment, but it really refers to the kind of hairstyle that you normally see on Shankar, you know, with the, lots of unkempt hair on his top of the head, which is what happens if you're a sannyasi in the Copper Age and you go off into the jungle. There's no barbers over there, and so slowly your hair gets longer and longer and more tangled, and you look a bit more like a Rastafarian, and then you put it all up on top of your head, and that becomes that, you see. So this is associated with Shiva. And when you see the picture of the Trimurti, you see Brahma Baba, who has normal short back and sides kind of hair. And then you see Vishnu, who has kind of longish hair, you know, because in the Golden Age you have a little bit long hair, a bit like Anna's length. And then you see Shankar is all with this bristling hair. And so when God is described as Keshavam, it's referring to the man, And then this other hairstyle name, which name I forgot, that's Shiva, the incorporeal. Because, as you know, in the path of bhakti, you have a mixing up of Shiva and Shankar. And, of course, for people who are raised in the West, it's not an issue. Shiva is obviously Shiva, and he's a point of light, and Shankar is the third one on the Trinity, and we don't have any problem like that. But it's quite a big issue when you are raised in the thought that Shiv Shankar is one thing, you see. And when we celebrate Shivratri here in BKs, the whole purpose of doing that is to explain to people the difference between Shiva and Shankar. And also the importance of the name Shivratri, the night of Shiva, refers to the night, which is also called the night of Brahma. And you'll find in the Gita it talks about the day of Brahma and the night of Brahma, but it doesn't explain it. So because Shiv Baba actually takes up each point and tells it to us, unless you actually see where it comes in the Gita and where it comes in the Murli, you wouldn't really know how close the Murli and the Gita are. But if you see them together, you'd be surprised and say, oh my goodness, here it is. This is this, this is this. And as I mentioned earlier, there are different voices in the Gita. The Gita is supposed to have been written by Vyas. And so Vyas is one of the characters in the Hindu pantheon. But what you see in reality in terms of the voice is some of the chapters are straight out of the Vedas. And some of them are the pre-Vedic Hinduism, which is really what we BKs relate to the best, where God is definitely someone and the soul is definitely someone else. And then what we call drama, the Gita refers to as destiny. And sometimes it refers to it as Maya. So you get this word Maya coming in the Gita in different places. Not very often, but it does come. It is not usually associated with the five vices, but it's usually associated with this concept that we have, drama. And Maya is also a word for magic. So that sometimes you get the idea of Maya associated with magic and supernatural, and that God does supernatural activities. And because of this, sometimes in the Murli it's clarified that God doesn't do anything to break the laws of nature. And a lot of devotion involves a lot of superstition. If you remember the picture of the ladder, you see the different grades of devotion. So the first kind of devotion, the highest grade, is the remembrance of Shiva, the Shivalingam. Then they start remembering Lakshmi Narayan, and then Radhe Krishna, and then there's Ram Sita, and then they start remembering people who are not real, like Ganesh and Hanuman, and then they start remembering trees and mountains and water and sunsets and this sort of thing, and then they start remembering gurus. And so you see the bhakti goes from pure bhakti to very tamopradhan bhakti, which is also associated with black magic and superstition and the sort of things that you find in what's known here in India as backward areas, areas where people have very little education. It's very conservative, ultra-conservative, extremely patriarchal. misogynistic and, you know, without much logic, or what we think of as logic. It has its own logic, but it's not our kind of logic. And so then Baba comes, and who does he select when he comes? You know, he is looking for those souls who are classified as the ancient devotees. That means the souls who began the process of devotion way back in the Copper Age, and who previously were deities in the Golden Age and Silver Age. And then by the time you get to the end of the Iron Age, everybody is so disguised and hidden that you don't know who's who. But he knows who's who. So he creates this school, this university. And so definitely in the Gita you see God the teacher. Although he does start addressing Arjuna as my son as it gets towards the middle of the Gita and towards the end. There is one part of the Gita where Krishna says, where Arjuna says to God, you know, I know that you are appearing to me in your friendly form. And so I want to see your real form. And what happens for us, what happens for us is we are used to Baba, and then we know Bab Dada through Dadi Gulzar. This is a friendly form. Baba never shows his heavy-duty, powerful form. But we know that it's there, right? Hidden behind the veil of drama. Because we know the description of God. He is very powerful. He's the almighty authority. And so he becomes our father, our teacher, our mother, our friend, our companion. And this is what you see in the Gita. But there is a section in the Gita where he actually reveals his mighty form. And that is very scary for Arjuna, who says, you know, I can't bear the intensity of this light. You know, it says brighter than a thousand suns. But more than the brightness of the light is the awareness he has that the one who's talking to him is Supreme God himself. But you can't study from Supreme God like that. You have to be with God in his friendly form. Because otherwise it's just way too scary and you'd be frozen to death in your scary state and not be able to take notes or pay attention or fool around or anything. Excuse me. So sometimes in our teachings we also get a little inkling of this. And a few people might have had some experiences or some little dream or visionary something where you detect the intensity of the power of God who is behind all this. Have you experienced that? Yes. And so, you know, we know this. It's hidden behind the veil. I've got some water. It's all right. Drink it. It's the problem of talking too much too long, huh? Okay, well, this is a good sign that I should stop talking. And over to you. Right. So I would like to have you break up into some discussion groups. And just for about half an hour, you can be in 3, 4, 5 groups like that. And just take up the question with each other that what is your relationship with Gyan, which is the real Gita? You know, because we're all BKs, we're all studying this. I don't know if you quite realize that this is the Gita knowledge, the original Gita knowledge, the real Gita knowledge. And that the book, the scripture, is the memorial of that. And I think sometimes our relationship with Gyan becomes perhaps oversimplified and maybe a little too simplistic. And then we wonder, you know, what is this really? Am I right? And so I think a lot of you must have been thinking about this and trying to figure out, you know, what really is this that we're doing here? And how do we really honor the Gita? And this is one of the questions that Magla was asking in the video. How do we honor the Gita? Because although it is said in many Murlis that the Gita says this and Baba says this and Sheet Baba is the real sermonizer of the Gita, not Krishna, and so on, but that's a fairly extreme statement to take up and explain to somebody, but probably not something that's a big issue for any of you. But just the question of your relationship as you're a student of God who is the speaker of the Gita, and all of these things that we're studying, they are mentioned in the Gita, but in such a way that people can't really understand it in the way that we do. So we're really very, very privileged that Baba has given us the key to be able to interpret it, and to live it and practice it like nobody else can. So is this an interesting question for you? What is your relationship with the Gita and the Murlis as the real Gita, and how you feel about your participation in this? And maybe take a look at where you go from here. And why you think, if you think, really knowing about the Gita together with this study is relevant and important. Is this a useful question for you? No? Yes? Who says yes? Okay, we have quite a few people. It's not very clear. Let me put it another way. You're studying Raj Yoga. Raj Yoga means to know the self as a soul and to be in remembrance of God, the Supreme Being. And all of this is described in the Gita, but the only thing that's the problem, you can say, is that it makes people body conscious because it represents the soul as a person, Arjuna, although it talks about you're a soul, and the soul, you know, it says there is the soul, but it doesn't really clearly say you are a soul. And it says that you have to remember God, but it shows God as Krishna, which is interpreted as a physical Indian deity, which is not the same thing as the incorporeal supreme soul Shiv Baba. But people who study the Gita seriously, they know that it's about some being much more subtle than the depicted deity Krishna. It is very clear in the Gita. Just talk to each other about your relationship with all of this at this stage. Yeah? Is that okay? All right. And then I'll come back to you at 3 o'clock and just let's see how you have been taking your discussion. Yeah? Om Shanti. So let's come back to front end of the hall. Everyone should take an extra lollipop. So did you have a nice discussion? It's very important to talk to each other over all these things. Do you do this at your centers? Not enough. Will you do more of this? Yes? Yeah, because churning is really what you were doing there, discussing on a particular subject, that's churning. And it's very stimulating for people to brainstorm with each other on some of these topics. So, would anybody like to share any insight that you gained by this whole seminar, including your discussion? We have another mic over there. Or were you more in inquiry? Yes, please. Sabrina, can we bring this mic down to the front and then maybe it's easier for people to hear from the individual. See if it's turned on because the brother's not there. Yes. So please come. We have a mic at the front. Share your insight of what you have taken from the discussion just now and anything that went before. You need a translator? Okay.
So we found out during our discussion that none of us actually has read Gita. But although we have not read that Gita, but we know for sure that the Gita that we are listening now is the true Gita, and it's the basis of that Gita as well. So what we feel that the knowledge of Gita that we are getting now is something very practical, that what Baba gives us now, and therefore we can live our life and we can choose how to act according to the knowledge that we are getting from Baba now, and we know that that is the true Gita. And Baba becomes like a role model here, like for us, just a point of reference for us, and that we are able, therefore, to follow what Baba says, to follow Srimad, in spite of what happens on a political level, social level, sort of what traditional morality that you were talking about. And what came up also in our discussion is that although in our country and perhaps in many other countries of the world as well, now people have many fears. And we are free from those fears now, and we can follow what Baba says because he is the giver of this true Gita to us, and we are aware of that. And we were also very happy to touch the issue that, you know, people are afraid of creating long-term plans nowadays because nothing is sure. And we are creating a very long-term plan now for the golden age. And so we're very happy about that.
Thank you. Spasiba.
Thank you.
Great. Anybody else like to share? You're very quiet. Yes? Anyone? Do I pick on someone? Okay, please come.
I am from Guyana, and I have read a little bit of the Gita, although not much, but with relations to Baba, to the knowledge that Baba is teaching us now, I can relate very much to it, because all the lines are there. The five vices are there. Krishna speaking to Arjuna, the charioteer, the horses. Now, with this Baba's knowledge, washing the intellect, we can make the connection. Once you've read the Gita, you can connect to it. It's the memorial of the knowledge that Baba is teaching us. So I would just like to share that. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Okay, let me have somebody who's really applause-worthy. Tell me some real insights. What did you learn today? Or what did you realize today? Anything? Yes? Please come. Yeah, come. Yes, you come. It's good. Everything is good. Press the on button.
Om Shanti. So I think what meant the most to me today was actually something that I'd been aware of recently, was that conventional morality. I just liked the way it was put, you know, to see it in perspective as conventional morality. Because I think that, I mean, I was reading Will Hodgkinson's book, and what I kind of noticed was when Neville had taken Gyan, he applied conventional morality to it. You know, he immediately put on the white dress, flew the flag, and, you know, that we're so used to conforming. And I think it takes a lot of courage not to conform and to really step away from that. And, you know, that whole thing of killing the relatives, because they conform socially and morally. And I've had an experience with that, and that was what actually led me to delving into it, to get to that point where I could be detached and really not mind at all. It took quite a lot of courage to get to that point, because we're so used to looking for others' acceptance, doing things in such a way that we don't upset anybody, that we don't have the repercussions. And it just took me to a point where it's okay. It's fine. Everyone has to go through what they have to go through. And I'm not responsible for their emotional stage. And I just thought, you know, I'd been looking at India and saying, everything has an expression of this age. And, you know, to see the Gita as the main focus, I thought it was brilliant. I just loved every moment of it. I think it is so valuable that as soon as it's all available, I think it's going to be really useful, especially in universities as well. Religious studies. Thank you.
Let's see. That's good. Thank you. That's a very good suggestion. Courage. Are you finding this is going to need a step of courage? When you take a step of courage, you know what happens. Baba gives you 1,000 steps of help. Yeah. Anybody else want to come and share? Okay, you and then you. Yes, please come.
Is it on? Oh, on? On. So for me today, the beautiful thing was the conventional, morality versus what Baba is telling us, or the divine morality. And so, so many times you're faced in the world with this conflict between what you know is true and what the world expects. And so, it was very empowering to know that it is good. It's just like when we value purity. It's good to value our divine morality as opposed to the conventional morality. Okay? Is this making sense? And so many times you face that in so many different aspects, job, family, so many, it's very practical application. And so that touched me very deeply. And to know that the true Murali, the true Gita, we're getting that, and we should value that so much and respect that so much. So anyway, I hope this is all making sense, but it touched me deeply. Thank you. Thank you, Baba.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, please.
So I like the comparison where you made the parallel between what's happening to the virtuous people in the Gita that you are re-editing or whatever, to what's happening today to us in, you know, the Gita that Baba is teaching us. And for me, it makes real what was happening then and what's happening now. And I think the comparison of the two tests is very good for us to see a better pictures of what was happening then and what's happening to us today. And I like in particular when you brought up the topic about don't take sorrow, but don't give sorrow. And I like the fact that you were talking about how we work so hard and not giving sorrow. But when we take sorrow, we accumulate things in our account. And I didn't see it as that. So.
Oh, I see. Keep your radio on your head.
What I realized to make a deep reflection is about the depth of the Raja Yoga.
E também eu nunca tinha pensado em refletir sobre quem aprende o Raja Yoga.
And I never thought about who is learning Raja Yoga.
Que ela respondeu que são pessoas virtuosas, pessoas com bom moral, éticas e comprometidas.
Then she answered that is people who are committed to the good values and good principles. Because in Brazil we don't have the Gita as reference, so it's very good to know that the Gita is now is the reference.
Yeah.
And her relationship with the Murlis is like an instruction, like a close relationship, like a everyday direction that he gives to her.
Thank you. Very good. Yeah, please take extra lollipops. We have an excess of lollipops. Anybody can have. Okay, do we have any more people who would like to share? Yes, please, come. You also come, so we have two together.
Om Shanti. Actually, I just want to make one comment, and then I have a question for you, Dennis, please. Just in terms of talking about conventional morality, again, I was just thinking how it is such a deep and subtle thing because we've been so used to it for so long that it's very easy for us to still be under the influence of conventional morality and not even be aware of it. So I suppose how do we become aware of it? I'm not sure, but I feel that when we find ourselves reacting because, you know, there's a part of the soul that knows that this is not what I should be following, but I don't really know how to move out of it. So there comes a sort of a resistance and failing. And so the reaction that I may have towards something instead of acting, instead of processing and acting accurately, I may react because I may not know for sure. But I was just wondering, you know, sometimes how do we know we're really, because sometimes we may not even realize we're under the influence of conventional morality. And before you answer that, I'll ask another question. This morning you mentioned about actions and that there is really, is it wrong or right? What is important is how it affects us and how we respond to something. And the question I have, if that is so, how do we then create karmic accounts?
I think you don't want to create karmic accounts.
I know, but how, you know, if something is not wrong, if something is neither wrong or right, but my reaction to it or my response to it.
Okay.
How that, you know?
Good question. When you see everything as a drama, and Baba has said everything in the drama is accurate, and the drama is about victory and defeat, success and failure, freedom and bondage, all the different pairs of opposites. And the Gita is about becoming independent of the pairs of opposites. I remember one Murli in which Baba said, this is an Avyakt Murli a few years ago, I have no idea the date or the year or anything, but I remember it very clearly. He said, your only problem is you get caught up in right and wrong. And that, he said, your only problem. So if that's our only problem and we can get out of that, then we don't have any problems. How nice that would be. What do you think? So conventional morality is, this is wrong, this is right, this one's okay, this one's not okay, this should be happening, this shouldn't be happening. That's conventional morality. I see. The unconventional morality or the divine morality is more like, okay, here's a situation. What should I do? And the situation is not classified right or wrong. It's just a situation, you see. Okay, the situation is, oh, this person has just beaten up that person. How interesting. Okay, so what should I do now? What should I do now? You remember Daddy Jenki's three Om Shantis. Who am I? Who do I belong to? And what should I do? This is Raj Yoga. What do I do here? You see, first we have to be soul conscious. And we have to tune in to Baba. And try to catch from Baba. Or maybe make a reference to Brahma Baba's life story, which is an encyclopedia for us. Okay, what did Brahma do? What would Brahma Baba do? What is Brahma Baba motivated by? Virtues, compassion, kindness. It's not about who's to blame or who should we punish. I see. There are four or five things that conventional morality is that make it not so useful for spirituality. And the first thing is that it is having double standards. One law for me, another law for everybody else. It tends towards hypocrisy. It is enforced using violence, always. It promotes corruption. Do we really need that? If you think, on the other hand, of virtues, just virtues, they're very simple. If you don't know what the virtues are, you can go and visit the History Hall and you can find 36 of them written on the wall outside. And you can take some time and think, you know, if I had these 36 virtues active in my day-to-day activity. And the eight powers, you mustn't forget the eight powers. You will always do the right thing. You see, because you're not coming at a situation saying, this is right, this is wrong, this should be, this shouldn't be. You're coming at a situation saying, oh, what is this? And your answer is clear to you when you're really connected with Baba. You know, and Baba will say to you, oh, this is a test of your patience. Oh, is that what it is? Okay. So then you go to your patients and say, hey, patients, we're having a test, come. You know, I need some assistance here. And then you go through this situation with patience, and the situation completes, and you are victorious. You created some good karma. Baba will give you a good grade, and on to the next situation. What's the problem? You see, it doesn't matter whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. The point is, what is it? A test of my patience. Oh, okay. Now, did you pass? Did you fail? You see, it's a very, very different angle of approach from the angle which says, this is right, this is wrong, this is good, this shouldn't be happening. How many of you during the day have the thought, this should not have happened? Or this should not be like this? Or this person should not have behaved in this way? It's bound to come up at least once or twice a day, doesn't it? And so whenever you hear yourself saying, this should not be, or this should be, and it isn't, and it should be, try to give yourself a red flag and replace that statement with, what is this? Because it is anyway in the drama. And if you say it should have happened this way or it shouldn't have happened that way, it means that you don't know the first thing about the knowledge of drama. It is. Okay, it is. You have to accept. And then what is it? Some sort of test, you know, because we're in university and we're having continuous assessment, and our continuous assessment is coming in the form of different BKs performing towards us in a manner designed to destabilize us. It's normal. It's supposed to be like that. And so the first thing you have to ask yourself is, what is happening here? What is this? What is this a test of? What virtue do I need to get me through this situation? Or what power do I need? Yeah, I mean, all these things are there, you see. But the thing is, when we react to it in our pre-gyan way, we have to ask ourselves, why am I continuing to do this when I know better? Or just stop yourself. Say, no, 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 not that, this, you see, because it's about changing a very, very deeply ingrained habit. And this is why we have to continue to learn it every morning in the Murali and to go through it in the laboratory of the day during the whole day And remembering that we have to be dispassionate, we have to be detached, we have to use our powers, we have to use virtues, and we have to have common sense. That's extremely important. And then we will experience good progress. And I think that whenever we experience good progress, it gives us enthusiasm to keep going and to go well and, you know, succeed. So, our time has disappeared. I hope this has been enjoyable for you. Of course, it's not anything conclusive, but it's perhaps a little taster of a way of studying the knowledge. And so please go up on that little website called rajyoga.tv and see what's there. And the Gita episodes will be coming maybe in the next couple of months. And then you can study it and follow it and see what it does. Very interested in hearing your feedback. Because if we find that this sort of way of approaching study is found to be stimulating and useful, then we will do more of it, you know. So thank you very much, and let's have a couple of minutes meditation to conclude. Om Shanti. And well, we were supposed to do this for 2 days, but I unfortunately have to be somewhere else, so we squeezed everything into 1 day. So I hope that's fine for all of you, and look forward to seeing you again very soon. Om Shanti.